Members, the chair will call to order the Minnesota House Committee on Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform. I want to explain what we're going to be doing here today very quickly as we move to finalize this division's omnibus bill. We will be marking that up tomorrow at our normal state of time in this room. And if needed, and I suspect we will need it, we'll then reconvene in the evening in room G3. I think earlier I had mentioned G6, but it looks like we're going to be in G3. I want to thank the members for getting their amendments in on time. We had a noon deadline today, and just a few amendments came in. Per committee rule, amendments to the amendments are due by 5. The chair is going to exercise discretion here to extend that out to 7 p.m., largely members, because we have a lot of amendments that came in, and I think it's only fair that folks have an opportunity to carefully read those through as they consider amendments to the amendment. So a couple extra hours in order to do that seems reasonable and fair to me. Hopefully that is fair to you as well. And obviously we have the State of the State address at 7:15. So that'll give us time to focus on that as well. Today, we're going to hear three bills that are related to OJP, and we're going to hear a presentation from OJP. I think we've been promising to do this since the beginning of session, and we finally got around to it, but, you know, all things work out when they should work out, and so I think we've got a very good combination of public testimony here for you today. Quite frankly, members, what the chair would really wants to encourage here is a couple of things. One is that we know that there are a number of groups, particularly from communities that have not had an extensive experience and history with access to OJP funding grants to be able to have that kind of access. The thing that I've tried to hold to closely throughout this session, however, is not to be in the practice of earmarking, our state investments to particular groups. It's by the large part of the reason why we have OJP, to be able to go through there, have access to state investments, through rigorous processes at that department, and we'll hear about that in a second. But the message here, quite clearly from the chair is to community groups that, one, we're not interested in doing direct earmarks. Two, we're interested in having consistent, high-quality grant application processes, and that's the pathway through which we will work to make these resources available. And then three, this is more a message to OJP, that we want to make sure that the decision-making process at the state is indeed accessible to community-based groups. And that, not saying that it's not, but I'm just reasserting that interest on our part. There have been some arguments that it's typically like the really big groups that get access, the kind of more conventional, if you will, groups that they get access over other groups. And as communities continue to emerge in our society, we want to make sure there's an equal playing field that's based on a quality process and standard for all community groups to have access to these investments. So with that then, members, I'm going to turn over to our testifiers who will walk us through the presentation long promised on OJP, and then we'll move into a discussion on three bills sponsored by three of our members that are looking to provide access to this funding for community-based groups. So You're on.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, members. My name is Kate Weeks. I'm the Executive Director of the Office of Justice Programs. That might be a little better. Okay. And I also brought along Tricia Hummel, the Assistant Director at the Office of Justice Programs. I have been with the Department of Public Safety since 2014. Most recently, I joined as the Executive Director of OJP at the end of October. And I want to thank you for the opportunity to come and talk about what we do and how we do it and allow you to ask questions about how we serve victims of crime in Minnesota. OJP provides leadership and resources to reduce crime in Minnesota, improve the functioning of the criminal justice system, and assist victims of crime. The Minnesota Office of Justice Programs was created in May 2003 to improve the effectiveness of Minnesota's criminal justice planning and grant administration activities. The office brought together programs formerly operated through five separate state agencies: the Minnesota Planning Office, Office of Crime Victim Ombudsman, and the Department of Public Safety, Education, and Economic Security. Today, there are approximately 40 staff within the Office of Justice Programs that work toward our mission of assisting victims of crime in several different ways, and I'll take a few minutes to walk through those ways. As some of you may know, our office administers the Crime Victim Reparations Program to assist victims of violent crime with their financial losses and recovery. Expenses may include medical costs, mental care costs, funeral and burial costs, lost wages, loss of support, and child care or household services. Our Crime Victim Justice Unit investigates violations of crime victim rights and provides assistance to victims navigating the criminal justice system. The Crime Victim Justice Unit also coordinates with other units in enhancing the services provided to crime victims, including conducting training on crime victim rights, assisting with public education efforts, providing technical assistance to criminal justice and advocacy professionals, and assisting with our policy initiatives related to crime victims. The Crime Victim Justice Unit also manages the Victim Information Notification System, which provides notification to victims on the custody status of offenders in county and local detention facilities. OJP also provides training on best practices, research related to criminal and juvenile justice data, and program evaluation, both for our own internal purposes and for our stakeholder partners, through our Statistical Analysis Center. OJP administers state and federal grants to programs assisting victims of child abuse, domestic and sexual violence, and general crime. And we also administer justice and community grants, which could also include such things as our violent crime enforcement teams, which are located throughout the state of Minnesota, working with local units of government to address gang and violent crime throughout the state. And OJP does not work alone. OJP partners with a significant number of organizations. These partnerships are critical in the services we provide and our mission. We utilize these partnerships in our RFP process, grant determinations, crime victim outreach and support, task force initiatives, training, reports, conferences, and most importantly, planning for our future. In addition, a focus is on our relationships with tribal nations. The Department of Public Safety's tribal liaison is working to expand our partnerships and strengthen relationships with the Minnesota's 11 tribal nations in areas concerning public safety, enforcement needs, responsiveness, and infrastructure of tribal crime victim services. In addition, he works with other DPS divisions to ensure responsiveness to tribal needs through regular outreach to develop relationships, learn about issues, and effectively communicate throughout state administration. Specifically here, OJP receives an annual appropriation of almost $40 million from the general fund. This state investment provides grants and support for such things as domestic violence shelters, child advocacy centers, youth intervention programs, crime prevention programs, sex trafficking investigations, multi-jurisdictional task forces focused on crime and drug activity, community crime programs, and legal services, assistance, and training. The staff at OJP work daily with our federal, state, and local partners to keep Minnesota safe and support the work of all stakeholders in improving the lives of crime victims throughout Minnesota. It's a very brief presentation, but it really provides an overview of the depth and span of what OJP currently does, with the main focus of serving victims of crime where they're at. One of the things that the chair just mentioned is something that OJP is looking at right now. It's really looking at, with all the things that we do, how do we best serve victims of crime where they're at throughout the state of Minnesota? And a lot of that is looking at, services, whether it be gaps in services throughout the state based on geography, social economic status, race, ethnicity, and what are the needs of those victims in those communities. And we are here to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Ms. Weeks. Obviously, based on the last slide, we're making pretty good, strong investments. Arguably, we can make more in this area, but I think this really reflects a long-term or a long-held perspective on the part of the legislature of the importance of these areas relative to promoting and advancing public safety in our state. Just very quickly, can you tell us roughly what might be the breakdown between crime victims reparations, community crime prevention programs? We're going to hear shortly from folks who are here to talk about community crime prevention, so I'm particularly interested in that that area of grant funding. And I'm not going to hold you to the numbers, but just sort of roughly, unless you have the solid numbers before you, you know, what would be the level of investment in these areas, again, particularly in community crime prevention programs?
At a high level, specifically to the areas that you're asking about, crime victim reparations is about $2.3 million. Crime victim assistance grants are higher at approximately $25.5 million. Gang and drug task force investment is around a little over $4 million. Youth intervention grants are a little over $3 million currently. And justice grants, community and justice grants, are about $3.3 million. And then there's smaller investments made for emergency funds, training funds, and the victim notification system.
Thank you. Are there any questions for this week's end? I'm sorry, Ms.
Hummel.
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment that I've had a chance to work with OJP on a number of topics through the years, and just noting for and my role outside the legislature as well as inside. And one thing I found is that there's not just the expertise on kind of disseminating grants and some of the other points, but even in the areas where they are awarding grants, there's a lot of expertise that's built up on the subject matter as well that I found to be really, really helpful, kind of in thinking strategically about how best to allocate the funds in a way that will kind of advance the causes that we're trying to advance. So more on this when a later bill comes up, but I just want to comment on it now. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Muller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my comment is similar to Representative Pinto's. I've had the opportunity and pleasure of working with OJP over the years, both in my role at the County Attorney's Office and also as a member organization who received a grant. I would just say, too, to members, if you wanted to check out their website, they offer a lot of very helpful resources. And I find myself looking at your website quite often for different information and resources that I need. And I just want to thank you for the work that you all do. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Muller. Representative Dean.
thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Director Weeks or Ms. Hummel. So you have 39.9 million, and I'm assuming that includes money that's directed from us here at the state that is some program specific as well. And the question is, you'd mentioned federal monies. So is there additional monies to this 39.9 that's coming in as federal dollars, or is this being funneled through our general fund as well?
Director Weeks.
Chair, Representative Dean, members, our The total budget for the Office of Justice Programs is about approximately $153 million, and that includes federal funds, federal grants, state funds, special revenue funds, and restitution.
Chair, do you?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Weeks. So what's coming from our general fund, and I'm going to do math out loud, which I probably should never do, but it looks like about 25% is coming from the general fund. Does that include money, you know, in the past we've appropriated money for JDAI and other types of programs? Is that included in this 39.9, or would that be included as part of the $153 million?
Director Weeks.
Chair, members, and I might need to phone a friend with fiscal staff. For example, JDAI, I know, received a direct appropriation from the legislature last biennium. I do not believe they have a current appropriation through OJP. That said, they have also applied for federal dollars. We have a juvenile justice advisory coordinator within our office to implement the Federal Juvenile Justice Detention Act. That's not the official name, but that what they do is she is the coordinator in the state of Minnesota to implement that act, and they're really looking at protections for juveniles within correction systems. And so she's our coordinator and provides support for the Juvenile Justice Advisory Committee. With that comes, they're called Title II federal funds, and so we are responsible. JJAC determines how those grants will be distributed. It is my understanding that JDAI is an ex officio member of the JJAC group and is has applied for those funds.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Director, good?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you, Mr.
Director Weeks, in the community crime prevention programs, are there federal funds that flow to those programs as well?
Chair, members, I'm going to phone a friend. Assistant Director Hummel is more familiar with that than I am.
Friend Hummel, welcome.
Thank you. So, Chair, members, we do get some federal justice assistant grant dollars, which get released through a competitive process based on a strategic plan that identifies certain areas. For a few years, we're doing our final grants on recidivism reduction that comes out of there. So there is some overlap between what could get funded under the federal JAG grants and the state community crime and the state youth intervention grants. Did that answer your question?
Are there any other questions? If not, thank you, Director Weeks and Ms. Hummel, and hopefully you'll stick around as we then hear from Representative Dean Gomez and Pinto. And so, Chairman B?
Am I up?
You are, indeed.
Okay.
Chairman Dean moves House File 2361 be laid over for possible inclusion in the division's omnibus bill. Is there an amendment?
Yeah.
All right. And Chairman Dean, my understanding is there's an amendment, but we're still getting that fetched, so we can.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'll speak to this at a point during the presentation. So House File 2361. Originally, we would allocate $2 million in the year 2020 and $2 million in the year 2021 to address Safe Streets Program, which would be a grant for the Minneapolis Urban League. And as you had mentioned earlier, you're not inclined to do direct appropriations, but it's to provide those interventions to prevent the escalation of violence that in many ways occurs in certain areas of the city of Minneapolis, as well as occurs in other areas. This is specific to addressing some of those in Minneapolis, but of course, opportunities for other individuals to be engaged is critical as well. You know, youth violence and other crimes are an issue that it's real easy to go to a place, well, those individuals, you know, are just bad people. We all know that a young man who maybe at the age of 15 or 14 or even 13 might grab a gun and shoot somebody, didn't wake up that morning and all of a sudden things in their lives were different and they decided they were going to do that. Generally, there have been many, many things that had happened along that individual's life that have gotten them to that point. And what we need to do is we need to begin to change that. And I think that that's what these types of programs actually do. These are community-based programs. So they're not likely to be inclined or be in the process of working with a lot of established grant programs and other types of things. And that's why we're bringing these projects here before you today to begin that conversation on how we can, one, get the resources where they need to be so that it can be the most effective work that's possible. And I'll wait to speak to the amendment till later. I have some testifiers here, and I'd like to turn it over to them and talk specifically about the programs that they have proposed and the work that they would be doing. So I'll turn it over to Mr. Belton, who's the director of the Minneapolis Urban League.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Belton. It's always a pleasure to see you, sir.
Thank you, Chairman Mariani, members of the committee. I'm Stephen Belton. I'm the chief executive of the Urban League Twin Cities, formerly the Urban League of Minneapolis. I'm here to speak on behalf of the Safe Streets Initiative, which is a comprehensive strategy to address community violence, chronic community violence. The Urban League serves in communities where violence is a daily fact of life, unfortunately. And we are directing a strategy that would be comprehensive both in its outlook and its programming, but also beginning with the way that we comprise the work that we do. This is a collaborative effort that would involve and include the faith-based communities, community-based organizations, local police departments, and community in both Minneapolis and in St. Paul. There are two essential elements to what we would be doing, and I'll just go through those very quickly. The first is that we would have a critical response or situational de-escalation effort. This is when situations are hot, when there's been a shooting, when there's been a violent act in a community. Immediately there are resources needed to deploy. Some of this is already being done by great organizations like Mad Dads, but the fact is that there's more incidents, more capacity, more drama, more crime being committed than a single organization can address as effective as they are. And so our critical response situational de-escalation effort would work in three areas. First, to one, to immediately quell and to address and to contextualize, compartmentalize incidents as they're occurring. Second, would provide mediation and dispute or conflict resolution. A lot of times when violence first erupts, it's just beef between two agitated or irritated individuals, and having a team of people who are trained, who have the capacity and ready to immediately to do conflict resolution is helpful. And then finally, a restorative justice component, where after the incident has settled in the immediate flare of the events, an opportunity to be able to provide redress so that these incidents don't recur a second time. So the first is the critical response effort that we'll be doing. And the second component is our effort to do lifestyle alternatives. To put it bluntly, it's not simply enough to go into a community that's hot or to intervene into a violent situation and say, stop, play nice, don't be violent. You have to provide an alternative to the lifestyle, to the options, to the opportunities that are available to people. And so what we would be focusing on is three kinds of alternative interventions and activities. The first is employment. Job is the best de-escalator of violence. If you got to get up and go to work every day, you don't have time to be carrying on, shall we say. And so providing alternative, this actually is in the wheelhouse of the Urban League. We have been providing employment with actually partnering with the state and with Deed and some of our grants for many, many years, and we do this, and we know how to do it, and we do it well. A second is educational supports. A lot of the target and the sort of the sweet spot for this group happens to be youth. Actually, it's youth males, 18 to 24, are at the epicenter of this activity. And so being able to provide educational supports, this is a group that is often dropped out of high school, does not have a, doesn't have a GED or a diploma or a industry-recognized credential. And so being able to provide assessment services and to be able to help them and move them and give them the support services they need to attain educational credential is a second element. And finally, mental health. And so I don't want to overgeneralize the incidence of mental health, but mental health is clearly a factor in some of the situational violence that occurs. In being able to identify it, to be able to partner with best practices that are out there, and with the police department to be able to identify where you have mental health as an aspect of violence, and being able to vector the participants in that activity into the mental health structure as a fourth piece. So that's the general outlay of what we're doing. What we're really pleased about in this strategy is that we already have on board, and Al Flowers in a moment will talk about this, the cooperation and the interest and support of the police departments, which we think is essential to this, but also the community being a partner with it, as well as community-based organizations and our faith-based organizations, which are essential, have the trust relationships, and are already doing this work in some ways way over the beyond their capacity to serve, because churches were not set up immediately. Of course, their first line of business is not to provide violence prevention. But they're doing this. They're doing this in terms of family counseling. They have identified and they're supporting families and the victims, most importantly, perhaps, of violence. So.
Mr. Chair, I'll turn it over to Mr. Al Flowers.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Flowers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My words would be about collaboration, and that's what I like about Bill 2361, is that we went all over Minneapolis, St. Paul, in some of the outer suburb areas, because we know some of the violence that we talk about leaks out into suburbs of St. Paul, suburbs of Minneapolis, like Brooklyn Park, Brooklyn Center. And mine was to bring everybody to together under one umbrella to do this work. Other organizations are included in this, as Steve said, Mr. Bell said about the churches. We got the faith-based community. And we got community organizations that's doing the work right now. My thing to say to this committee, I understand informational, trying to deal with the OJP, that we have a state of emergency to me as an activist. I'm an activist. I've been labeled the field marshal by our community, one of our community leaders, Mahmoud El-Khati, and that's to get everybody together. And that's what I'm here for. And on Sunday, I watched as a young man, 21-year-old man, laid in the street on 7th Street in Minneapolis, and watched that, and watched the family and the emotions of that. And I say that to express how important this is, that we are asking for the help. I came to the legislature to say we are asking you for your help. I don't know how the appropriation and things go like that. But this young man got killed, and then the next night, somebody went right to the house of another young man and shot him while he was holding his baby in this community. While he was holding his baby, he's in the hospital. One person that was shot on Sunday is in the hospital with a bullet in his head. This is serious stuff. I'm not playing with it. I don't debate. Representative Long, Representative Chair Mariani, Representative Dean. No, I've been fighting a long time to get this battle right. I'm here to ask for support of from the state with the Minneapolis Urban League, who has stepped up to the plate and say, I will be responsible for this. I will be the responsible agent to take us to the next level. And I believe in it, and I hope you guys believe in it and do something about it. I don't want it to be just about the OJP. I want you to reconsider the $2 million that we asked for Minneapolis and St. Paul to do this work on the ground in our community. We need, I'm asking for reconsideration, amendment. I know, that's what I'm asking you to do. I know you can do many things. We're only asking, you got a 40-some million dollar budget. We're asking for this for a lot of communities, not just the African American, the Somali community who have problems too, all communities. And I think if we got it under one umbrella, if we have it under one umbrella, we can make something happen together. Community-based, working with the police, working with Chief Arredondo, working with Chief Axel in St. Paul, Johnny Howard, Reverend Spence and the God Squad. We can put this together if you give us the opportunity and give us the resources to do it. Those would be my words. I thank you for giving me this opportunity. I thank Representative Dean, Aisha Gomez, Poo Lee, Senator Champion over in on the Senate side. I thank all y'all for this opportunity to express this to the state legislator of Minnesota, because I know you can help us. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Flowers. And our condolences on the loss in your community of late. I too read the story of the shooting in your neighborhood, and it seems like it's a story that repeats itself way too often. At some point, what I'm hearing is a strong appeal that we put our best minds and efforts and resources together in order to break those cycles of violence. It seems to me, and Mr. Belton, you spoke to this, that part of the necessary element in order to do that is to powerfully be able to engage those who are on the ground, closest to the ground, to do that groundwork. But I'm also hearing that from both of you, sirs, that that is work that is best achieved when there's strong coordination and collaboration among all the resources in the community, including our public safety elements in those communities. I'm wondering if either one of you could speak a little bit quickly about, I think you did very quickly, Mr. Flowers, about how those conversations and relationships, particularly with local law enforcement, what gives you the most reason for hope, if you will, in terms of being able to powerfully interact with them in your respective communities?
If I may, Representative Mariani, members of the committee, it may seem odd to you, but the police are actually coming to us. They are acknowledging that they can't do this by themselves. They've known that for a while. That's why they try to work with as many community groups as they can. They also understand that the fix to this problem is not simply to come in after there's been a shooting. And so the police do well once there has been a criminal act, a violent act. They are not so good, and nor is their capacity or their warrant to work on the front end. This is a violence prevention strategy. And so while it is speaking into and the work would be directed to violent situations, it is also directed toward those situations pre-violent. And so to prevent them from occurring in the first place, and then for preventing them from coming in on the tail. So the police, as our conversations have happened so far, have been very supportive of this effort. It is based on, it is a research-based strategy based on best practices from around the country. We know what has worked in other communities. We also know what will work in this community. And frankly, we can't do this without the police, but they can't advance this effort toward stemming the tide on the front end without our work as well. I would say, if I may quickly, that I know that there is a philosophical resistance in the legislature in general on funding, having direct funding with community-based organizations. And to that, I would say, how are things working out so far? How is it working out doing the standard operating procedure? How is it working out when you set up these intermediary organizations that include state agencies and asking them, are you having any traction? I'm saying that it's time for change. It is not okay with us, and I suspect it is, I believe it is not okay with you to have another year, to have another day where we keep getting these reports of these violent situations when we have the capacity to try something different. We have the expertise, the relationships, the experience, and the commitment to get this work done. And our commitment to you is that you will be happy with what you see. We will produce the results that you are looking for and that we all deserve.
That's a fair criticism
and Representative,
an observation. Yeah. Mr. Flowers.
Chair Mariani, and just to add on to what President Belton said, We have been working with Deputy Chief Knight and Chief Arredondo and the police department, as I have Reverend Spence and Johnny Howard in St. Paul. We have been working with them on procedural justice issues over the last year. We've had approximately 10 meetings at the Urban League, at the Park and Rec, at different locations, trying to bridge the gap between the police and the community. That's why this is so important, because it's a community-based solution.
Very well. Questions from members? Representative Johnson and then Representative Long.
Chair Mariani, members, I don't have a question, I just a little bit of a comment. I want to commend these two testifiers. They hit on the key word of how to fix this issue. It takes the community. They're willing to step up, work with their community, work with law enforcement. Law enforcement are there to protect everybody. But when they're constantly looking over their back to see who's going to stab a knife in it, it makes it very difficult. Like I say, I commend you on the work you're doing. I want to do everything I can to help, because we need to make our community safe. Granted, we do not like giving grants directly to a particular group. That's just the way the nature of this is down here. But I think we try to make the groups perform and show that their program works, to make sure we get it to the program that works. I hope you understand that. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to speak in favor of the appropriation and this effort. I've had a chance to see the good work that Mr. Belton and Mr. Flowers have done in the community firsthand in some very tough times when the Urban League has been a place for the community to come together, and particularly in some very tense moments. I think that you all have done an excellent job at de-escalating situations, at being present in the community, at trying to intervene in a time that will prevent further violence and help folks get on the right path. So you have a proven track record of doing this. You've done a great job in the years past. I think you're the leadership of both of you, Mr. Belton at the league, and then Mr. Flowers working in the community, has set an excellent example for how this work should look in community, how it should be done to intervene early and be with the community, present with the community, but also working collaboratively with law enforcement in a way to help move this forward. So I think actions speak for themselves, and I think that we should acknowledge those and be willing to put some state resources behind them.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Long. Representative Considine.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. You're basically describing the beginnings of a community policing program. I would encourage you to reach out to other resources in the city, because it needs to be, it can't be just the police too. It needs to be the other departments. They all need to be working together for this solution, but you're coming to community-based policing on your own, and I commend you. You did mention one of my other favorite topics, which is restorative justice, and I'm just wondering if you have some ideas about how you will be making the community whole with the restorative justice program.
Mr. President Belton.
Chairman Mariani, Representative, first day, this is not actually the beginning. We've been working on this for a few years now. And second, just to be clear, restorative justice tends to be something that it tends to be victim, tends to be an interaction between the victim and perpetrator as opposed to community. I'm glad you lifted that up, because what we are learning in our work around trauma is that entire communities are impacted by. And so, for example, this incident that occurred over the weekend where the young man is shot holding his baby, we're all feeling that. Anybody who has a pulse is feeling that. And so there is a community impact on that. But the best practices that we are aware of involve trained therapists, trained interventionists, let's not call them therapists, who work with victims and with the perpetrators of violence to restore that relationship and to get back to a normal, or at least to a new normal. And we would be impacting them. We don't have the resident expertise in ourselves, but it is in our community. There are many churches, community groups, and actually therapists who are working in this and who know this model and know it well, and who have the cultural competence to work in our communities.
Chair Consovoy.
Thank you. The third leg of the restorative justice is community. And again, you are reaching out. It is, though, the leg that sometimes does, yeah, in the rush to help the offender and the victim, sometimes the community is left behind, but I think it's actually the most important part long term. And it sounds like, again, you're on the road to doing that. But I think that has to be a deliberate thrust to make sure that, like you just said, this has impacted your entire community. You need to reach out to those folks, and there needs to be a community component to it.
Very well. Members, this is a good time then to talk about the amendment that Representative Dean will be offering tomorrow.
Yes,
when
Mr.
we bring
Chair.
Up the omnibus bill. And if you look at the language, it does a number of things, including really naming the state's granting investment in community-based violence prevention programs. And to Lee Johnson's observations and to President Belton's comments earlier about how we've done things conventionally here, I think, Representative Dean, your language really speaks to us learning from experience, learning how to better make the investments that we properly are investing in, doing that within the context of being able to have opportunities for those resources to not only be available to very specific communities that, you know, historically as a state, we've not, frankly, in my opinion, done well, but also to the type of activities that those kind of organizations can do, namely working precisely from a on-the-ground community perspective. And so this amendment, hopefully when we'll talk about it when it's offered tomorrow, will allow us to continue to push and evolve our thinking in terms of how to better direct resources without compromising any commitment that we have to quality and rigor in the process of having community-based organizations have access to state resources, all consistent, I would argue, with our approach throughout this whole session of community-centered public safety, understanding that it really does take all elements of our community, certainly those in law enforcement, but certainly groups like the ones we just heard from and that we're going to hear from in the next few minutes. So, Representative Dean, if you have any comments on that, then we're going to move forward. And Representative Poston has a question as well. Mr. Your question.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Chair, I'm just, are you referring to the A48 amendment?
I am. Yes,
okay.
Sir.
Thank you very much.
Yes, sir. Representative Dean.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members, I think President Belton said it best. If we keep doing what we're doing, we're not going to see any change. And what we're doing is not working. I'm a firm believer that the closer to the community these programs and initiatives are, the more likely they are to be effective. You know, Mr. Flowers is able to have conversations that I'm not able to have, that the police chief's not able to have, that other individuals are not able to have, and that's a critical piece. You know, the amendment that will be offered will give some money towards this program. I wish it was $2 million a year for the next 2 years. But I also know that we have established programs like OJP that has funding. And generally, you know about those because you've gotten them in the past. And that's probably the number one indicator whether you'll get another one. But if folks don't know, they're unable to access, they're unable to go through the process necessary to get the resources on the ground where we need them, it's not likely to happen. So I appreciate you having the Office of Justice Programs present prior to these I'm hoping that we're going to be able to make those types of connections and that they'll be able to assist not just the folks at the Urban League, but other folks who are doing this important, critical work out in the community that I can't stress enough how critical it is right now. The incidences that were spoken about have recently happened. They're not the first incidences. There's likely to be more. And if we can do anything to sort of change the direction of way things are going, it's probably going to be the best use of any public safety dollars that we put out there. So I just, again, want to thank you. And I hope that as we move forward, that folks will consider that different communities are impacted differently, and we need to think of them in different ways. So, again, thank you, members, and I will end my testimony and allow you to move on to the next testifier.
Thank you, Chair Dean, for your thinking through of stronger and better ways for us to do what we all care about and bringing the kind of passion and energy to that. To our deliberations. With that, the chair is going to lay over 2361 for possible inclusion in our division's omnibus. Representative Johnson.
I was just going over the amendment that was passed out, and it does not, the amendment doesn't apply to the bill that we're talking about, it's 2361. It was on for 23 or 2649.
Yeah, Representative Johnson, you're correct. This will be moved tomorrow when we pull up the omnibus bill. The reason I had it pulled up today was to really emphasize the direction in which these three bills are encouraging us to go to in order to address very specific violence issues in our communities. And to do that in very specific ways in terms of investing in community-based programs. But you're correct, it's not to this bill. It will be offered tomorrow to the omnibus bill.
We were discussing one bill. The amendment dealt with another bill that's going to be amended onto the third, onto the omnibus.
Again, Representative Johnson, this is all about transparency and full disclosure about what's going to happen tomorrow. The bills before us are being laid over, and the intent is to have those moved into the omnibus bill with this as an amendment to that omnibus bill. Chair Dean.
And Mr. Chair, just to let folks know, we never moved the amendment.
No,
this was just sort of for your information. So that's not what's before us. So we're not doing anything that might be misconstrued as something different than it is. It was just more for your information. And you know, I hope we have the bill number ready and right for tomorrow.
Well said for the record. With that, Representative Gomez. Representative Edelson, if you will be so kind as to move House File 1638, the recommended for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
So moved.
So, Representative Gomez, House File 1638 is before us. Welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. I'm really pleased to be in front of you and to have the opportunity for you to understand a little more about this program that does so much for the communities that I represent here. I just wanted to share a little bit about, just from the perspective of a community member, about the work that Mad Dads does. That's what our original House File 1638 originally was an appropriation to Mad Dads, $500,000 over each of the next 2 years. But as someone who, you know, I live in South Minneapolis, close to Lake in Chicago, which is where Mad Dad's offices are, and I also was an employee of the city of Minneapolis in the city council. And so there's a lot of folks who've served in local government know, you know, you're kind of, your city councilor or your mayor is sort of your closest level of government. And so when incidents of violence took place in our community, It was our office, you know, that got the call. And so we worked a lot with Minneapolis Police Department in my capacity there. And, you know, partnership is really central to the community-oriented policing strategies that Minneapolis Police Department is committed to. And, you know, I think that Mr. Belton and Representative Dean spoke to the, you know, the necessity of partnering with the community organizations that are really deeply and authentically embedded in community in order to have a community-oriented policing strategy that works. And Mad Dads is that really deeply embedded community partner. You know, these are, I represent some of the communities that are the most challenged by poverty and disinvestment and the cycle of violence and incarceration that you guys discuss so much in this committee. You know, Mad Dads, VJ Smith is with me and he's gonna talk more about their work, but their bread and butter is really this on the street outreach. You know, Mad Dad staff who are all community members walk the streets, you know, in areas where we have problems with street level, commercial sexual exploitation, open kind of drug transactions happening on the street. And they'll talk to everybody and anybody, and they do. Their green sweatshirts are we all know when we see them coming, right? Because there's usually a little group walk down the street and talk to everybody and see where people are at. Connect people with resources, with programs that exist. They're violence disruptors, you know, in a really direct way. The other thing is that, you know, in those tragic moments when we lose community members, Mad Dads is also there. There for the families, at the hospital, at the crime scene. And, you know, I've been a part of a number of vigils that Mad Dads has held. And, you know, you know, they bring invite the community in, feed everyone, hold that space for us to honor people who have been lost in our community, and people who have, you know, a lot of, I mean, I think the last time that we were together off of Lake Street, it was for a couple individuals who'd passed away from drug overdoses. And, you know, and it's just this real honoring of all of that humanity is sacred, life is sacred, and every life deserves to be honored and celebrated by the community that lost them. And they're also with us during our good times. You know, I think that we have a lot of like deprivation kind of narratives about our communities, and it's really important that we lift up the assets that we have and all of the good things and all of the great people. And so I appreciate that also about Mad Dads just as a community member that, you know, you're with us in our hardest times and you're with us in our bright times. And so thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And this is Mr. VJ Smith. He's the executive director of Mad Dads.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Smith. Please give us your name and your testimony.
My name is VJ Smith and I'm the national president of Mad Dads and the founder of Minneapolis Mad Dads, which stands for Men Against Destruction, Defending Against Drugs and Social Disorder. I myself came from a life of crime, grew up without a mom and dad at the age of 9 years old, decided to dedicate my life to giving back to those that had to come up under that kind of lifestyle. When I turned my life around, I came back on the streets and realized that we needed something on the streets that could relate to those people out there. I want to just say to all the other groups that we all need support, and there's not a lack of, you know, dollars. Hopefully there won't be a lack of support for all the groups. So I want to say there's a need for all of us to do this work. We've been doing this for 20 years, and what we're trying to say is the capacity of the problem has been growing, but the capacity of the funding has not. I was thinking about when I came up here in 1977, I got $203 from GA. I only got it one time because I got a job and got my act together. But we still give out $203 in 2019, that same amount. Well, our capacity has grown, and our capacity has grown because of our effectiveness. We have the ability to affect families. We have the ability to transform them, and we have the ability to get in the community and touch their lives. After 20 years of giving back to this community, not only are we nurturing the same kids, but now we're nurturing their kids and showing them the right direction. And so we're saying to you that we know what to do with families. We know how to respond to them. We don't have all the answers. We don't try to have all the answers. But we've got 1 million hours out on the streets of Minneapolis. And the work that we do downtown and other areas, those kids are coming from your community, and we're protecting them to make sure they're safe. So they get back to Stillwater, so they get back to Brooklyn Park, so they get back to those other areas. So not only are we protecting the north side and the south side and Brooklyn Park and Brooklyn Center, but we're protecting your babies when they come down into our communities and need protection. We're there to stand in the front line. We believe that fathers are important, and one of the reasons why us as men are out there on the front line is because the men are not present in a lot of communities. And so we know that our fathers are critically important to be out there and take a stand against violence in our community. We also realize that fathers needed to be trained and taught how to be better fathers. So we went into the jails. There was no dollars to go into jails. I don't know if y'all can help us get some correctional dollars, but we went in anyway, and we said we would go in for free just so that we could change their lives. Hundreds and hundreds of men have came out of incarceration because we went in and told them when they get out, we've got something for them. We can help them. We can help change their lives. So we've been growing capacity. We've been building, and we've been doing exactly what we're supposed to do. But those dollars have not been following us. We need the kind of admin staff that can make it everything go smooth for our outreach team when they're out there putting their lives on the line. And they don't mind putting their lives on the line. But they need a dental plan. They need some kind of plan, and these brothers do it because they care. They do it because they know it must be done, because if we don't do it, who else will? When we started working for Metro Transit and making the Metro Transit safe and making it safe for our women and men and elders to ride the bus, we knew we had to do that. We've been doing that now for 15 years. We reduced crime on the Metro Transit bus by 38%. That's one of the great things that we can do, and we know we can do it. We have those relationships. Other people have relationships, too. This is not us against them. This is us and us working together to say if we all work together, we can make a difference. And we can only do that if you support what we're doing. So the other piece for us is our youth development and what we do with our youth. If we start early, we don't have to worry about this big problem we have. We've got a lot of young people. Matter of fact, I'm supposed to be at the county homeschool at 3 o'clock. I just texted them and said, I'm going to be a little late, but I'm fighting for you. Those young kids want to know how they can be better. They don't have fathers in their lives. And it's our job to be the fathers in the community. It's our job to be the leaders in the community. It's our job to take on that role. And so we can do that. We know how to do it. We're not the best. We're not the only ones. But we've been doing it for 20 years straight, and we do know how to do it well. And we do know how to train people to take our community back. And we do know that if we build capacity, we can do more. So for us, this is about building capacity on something that we've turned out to be the greatest, not only in the state of Minnesota, but the greatest in the nation, as they nominate me as the national president of Mad Dads all over the country, because they've seen our model, they've seen what we were able to do, and I'm proud to say that we do that work and we do it the best right here in the state of Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Smith, and thank you for the work that you do. Representative Long has a question, then we're going to move to the other bill because the time is starting to
I'll be very brief, Mr. Chair. It's not a question, it's a comment. I am a co-author of the bill and a proud one. I have seen Mr. Smith's work in the community. I can't remember a community vigil where you haven't been there. I can't remember the time when the community hasn't gathered in mourning or celebration, as Representative Gomez said, when I haven't seen Mad Dad's presence. So you guys are a constant force for good, and you're doing good work, and I think we ought to support it. So thanks for everything you're doing.
You're well. With that, the chair, thank you, Representative Gomez and Mr. Smith. With that, the chair is going to lay House File 1638 over for possible inclusion in the division's omnibus bill. With that, we have the third bill on the same topic, Representative Pintles, House File 2649. And in the meantime, Representative Edelson, would you be so kind? I'm always leaning on you to move the minutes of April 2nd.
So moved, Chair.
Representative Adelson moves adoption of the minutes of April 2nd. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails, and the minutes of April 2nd are adopted. And members, okay, very well. Representative Pinto moves House File 2649 brought up for possible inclusion in the division's omnibus bill. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So this is a sort of a third in a series. I'm so proud to be here with a couple of community leaders, John Thompson and Farhio Khalif, to talk about House File 2649. And I think what I'm going to do is just dive into having them talk about their thoughts about the importance of the funds that are proposed to be used and the difference that they can make. So I'm not sure which of them wants to go first. We're saying ladies first. So,
okay.
So, Mr. Chair, with your permission, we'll have Ms. Khalif introduce herself and her testimony.
Very well. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Khalif.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. My name is Farhio Khalif. I am the Executive Director of Voice of East African Woman. And I want to take the time to thank Representative Pinto and members who are supporting these bills. I also want to thank Office of Justice Program, and I'm also hopefully hoping that other organizations before us who was here to collaborate and work as well. In 2014, I started a program called Mothers Against Youth Recruitment. And from get-go, I partnered with then Hennepin County Sheriff Richard Stenick, his office. In 2017, we become a partner and to work on how to we and help and end youth being recruited under violence organizations. I want to thank Office of Justice Program. We worked closely with them in 2017. Partnering with Sheriff Stanek, we realized how much it's important for us to come together, build the bridge and relationship through communities of the immigrant communities, the African communities. And we really believe that if we step up and advocate for issues we care about, especially the youth issues, that every community is different needs. The African community, immigrants, and the African-American, when you look at it, the violent organizations, they recruit the same way, but they have a different mindsets. And for us to come forward today, letting you know, we've been on the ground, and we're still on the ground, as we work with closely with mothers. Our organization works with violence against women. We see mothers who are struggling culturally, who has a big families. The youth are on the streets, and sometimes they don't know what to do. Our hope is just to fight for more programs to help the youth to get them out of the streets. Working with Sheriff Stanek at the time, we realized how much important it is to open these windows and these doors for families to come together and be aware of where the children are after hours when they get out of school. But when you don't have resources, when you don't have programs, it's easy to be recruited. It's easy to be put out, and sometimes I get a call almost every day. Over a month, we get over 1,000 calls, and sometimes mothers are afraid to come forward because of cultural appropriate. They don't want to speak about what's going on. And I organized many community meetings where I have both community faith leaders, the law enforcement, including our then Governor Mark Dayton, to come to those meetings and panels to talk about and anti-violence communities and how can we help our youth. There's so many organizations in the state of Minnesota. File number 2649 is not only going to help here at the Twin Cities, but it's going to go around the region of the state of Minnesota. Including, I was on Rochester over the weekend and talking to some families, including St. Cloud, Wilmer, and so on, and many other communities, and Twin Cities, St. Paul, and Minneapolis. We're also working with the community engagement team and St. Paul Police Department. I was hoping Sheriff Bob Fletcher to be here today, but he just let us know he couldn't make it. But he's a fully support of these issues, and he will work closely with the Office of Justice Program and the Chair's office as we move forward in this program. I'm just here today to let you guys know The struggle continues for the African-American and African immigrant communities. For us to collaborate, to come here together here today, it would just help us to put our voices together and advocate for issues we care for our children. There's a lot of organizations or a lot of community members who doesn't have a voice to come forward. But this appropriation funding that I'm hoping that you guys support today will help us to continue our fight for our youth and African immigrants and African American communities. And I thank you very much for your time, and I hope you support this.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Khalif.
Oh, good afternoon, Chair, and the rest of you. Thank you so much to this body for allowing us the opportunity to testify on behalf of 2649. And I reiterate what Fahil said. I talked to Bob Fletcher at probably 6 o'clock this morning. He said he couldn't shake his 12 o'clock to make it here. But he said to make sure that I said to you guys that he 100% supports everything that we're doing here, and he looks forward to doing more work with us.
And you know what? I need to interrupt because, for the record, I need you to give us.
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is John Thompson, FFJ, Fight for Justice. I'm in collaboration with her here. I just wanted to start by saying that I don't know if many people know this about our community, but my community is allergic to bullets. And you guys are the antidote. You are the antibiotic, so to speak, and the gatekeepers of some of the funds that we need to do some of this work in our community. I never thought that I would be here testifying before you guys because I didn't know anything about the process. This building has always been an intimidating building for me, but the need has been so drastic for funding from community-based organizations in our community. I can reiterate what VJ Smith and Steve Belton said. It's not working. I had an extensive conversation with our governor, Governor Tim Walz, and I said the same to him. I said, traditional is just not working. We're going to have to start trying to do some non-traditional stuff. Governor Walz, we've tried to lock this problem away, and it hasn't worked. We've tried to police our way out of this problem, and it hasn't worked. I actually found out what worked for me, and it's starting to work in my community. We're starting to take kids out of the community and take them to experience things that they've never experienced before. I think we took about 40 kids last week to see the Timberwolves play the Golden State Warriors. 30 kids. 20 of them said they'd never been in this stadium before. This stadium's been around for a while, but they've never been. What happened for me was the same thing. A lot of times my friends would be getting in trouble and doing a lot of things that they weren't supposed to be doing. And I had someone investing in me. So by the time I got back to the community, they were probably getting a butt whooping. And I was tired. I'm going home. So, you know, people would take me fishing and ice fishing and things that I've never experienced before in my life. I never would have thought that I loved to play the tuba had somebody never introduced me into the symphony orchestra. You know, so some of the things that work for me and got me to this point right now is working in my community. Kids tell me all the time, Mr. Thompson, when are you going to take me back? I've had kids tell me that they think I'm their father. I always came to these public safety hearings, and I talked about Philando. I've talked about Philando Castile. That was my friend. And I always talked about how the police. And then last summer, my son was shot 6 times. My son has a bullet lodged in his 9th vertebrae. And they asked me, do you want to do something to the kid who shot your son? And I said, no. I don't want to do anything to him. I don't want nothing to happen to him. I don't want him to go to jail because we can't lock this problem up. We can't keep killing each other and throwing away the key. Here's a 24-year-old man that shot my son only to find out that I know his dad. What did I tell his dad? I want your son to go to jail? No, I want your son to be a testimony. I want your son to come here and testify to this body how John Thompson saved my life after I tried to kill his son at a funeral. These are some of the things that people inside of this building don't get to see that occurs in my neighborhood. And I don't think that, I know that we all together can fix the problem, but I came here with an agenda all the time, and I thought you guys could fix it for me right away. I get the process now. I know that this doesn't happen right away. I know that coming here yelling at people doesn't get things done. I know that coming here working together with this body and trying to find positive solutions to these problems is the only way that we fix it. And I can't fix it by myself. I need you. I need you. And like Brother Vijay said, you guys need us. I don't think you know it, but traditional is not working anymore. We have to start trying some non-traditional things. I never thought that I'd be sitting here talking about anything other than police violence, because that's what I saw for a long time. You know, Philando was a great friend and a coworker. I worked with Philando for St. Paul Public Schools for 11 years. There are kids right now that no doggone will, they can't make it to Duke University. There are kids right now that no doggone will, they can't make it to Georgetown University. But they can make it as a machinist. They can make it as a carpenter. They can make it as electricians. We've removed some of those things out of the schools. I'm trying to bring something back that works. It worked for me. I made $80,000 last year as a machinist for St. Paul Public Schools. I wanted to be a psychiatrist. I know what works. I know what works in my community because I've lived there for 40-some years as a black man. I know exactly how to change the conditions in my community because I've lived in them. And I also know that some of you also know. I just feel like we need you guys more than you know. I feel like you guys have to understand how much we need you to help change the conditions in our community. I think my grandma used to say it all the time, greyhounds just don't float on water, baby. So we got to figure out a way to fund some of these non-traditional programs, because the traditional programs that you've been funding, they're not working because the conditions only getting worse. The symptoms, you guys are the antidote, you guys are the antibiotic to fixing the conditions that exist in my community. All we need is a little hand. I thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. And then Representative Dean, you have one other, and we'll need to... Oh, Representative Pinto, goodness. Representative Dean, do you have anyone?
I know we look a lot.
Yeah. It's the glasses, man. Oh. Representative Pinto, my apologies to you.
Thank you.
We're going to have to move rather quickly.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I gather there's one more testifier who's going to be really, really quick with the Chair's permission.
Please, welcome to the committee.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, everybody. My name is Ukasha Adekane, and I'm the Executive Director of FREYO, a local nonprofit that works with the East African youth adults in our community. So we help them achieve the social emotional support they need. Last year, in the year of 2017-2018, we served 107 youth, all from our neighborhood, in really good desperation at that time. We served youth in school, youth out of school. Many of them, they didn't know how they can handle conflict. They didn't know how they can handle anger, how they can manage stress and everything. And when we bring them into our programs, they actually learn some good things. But one of the main challenges we faced at that time was lack of resources. We have been knocking doors, knocking every door, you know, like trying to find a resources for these youth. They are the youth of color. They are immigrant and refugee youth in our communities whose parents cannot speak an English, or they speak little English, who don't have, some of them even don't have a father or a father figure in their homes. They live in shelters. They have been affected by many, many, many challenges. And today I stand strong, or I sit strong in this table to testify on their behalf and the need they have. When we were teaching our program, which is called Let It Go Program, Conflict Resolution, Anger Management, and Leadership, all in 4 weeks, in that journey, I have learned the desperation of these youth, where they need a social, emotional support so that they can achieve in academics, they can achieve in their schools. And these are the stats. Every year, we look at stats on how, you know, like children from other communities are excelling. These are children who are working part-time jobs to support their parents when it comes to meeting the family need, because the parent cannot speak English or they can't find the job that they want. They work as late as 12 a.m., and they are supposed to be in school as early as 8 a.m., and that is not fair for a child. we have been focused, in many years, we have been focusing in meeting the need of children, you know, like whether it's having them learn math and algebra, but that's not how it is. It's finding them a resources that they need to support, that they need to support them when it comes to social emotional support. The desperation is really high in our community, and I'm testifying on their behalf. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you for your testimony, sir. And thank you, Mr. Thompson.
Thank you.
And Ms. Khalif for your testimony as well. Hopefully, Representative Pinto, tomorrow when we entertain Representative Dean's amendment, we'll be able to, if we're successful in that, we'll be able to signal our intentions of making sure that the kind of programs and efforts and methodologies that all of these testifiers have given testimony here today can, in fact, receive or at least be eligible to receive the kind of investments that we badly, I think, need to make in order to make a true difference in our communities. So with that, good idea. So I'm reminded that that we're all encouraged to stop by and have a conversation with the Office of OJP, particularly those who are interested in applying for grants through those that state investment scheme. So with that, the chair is going to lay over House File 2649 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you, Representative Pinto. So
thank
Representative
you.
Pinto,
thank
you have House members. File 2785. Might as well take advantage while you're still there. And Representative Pinto, your motion is that House File 2785 be included in be laid over for a possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Pinto, Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. So House File 2785 builds on some grants that that are currently funded in the base for the investigation of sex trafficking. They're statewide grants, and I feel like it's worth just taking just half a minute here on some context. I had previously served as the Director of Statewide Training and Protocol Development for the Safe Harbor System, addressing sexual exploitation, in particular of youth. And in 2015, we added, got some money for grants to investigate sex trafficking, the first ever state support for local investigation trafficking. I was joined in that work by Representative Miller in partnering on that. And I have to acknowledge Chair Cornish, then Chair Cornish, who initiated that and kind of who permitted Representative Miller and me to move that forward. And that has built up over the past 2 years. As I've looked at that and working with others as well, there's really a need to coordinate our statewide efforts in connection with and collaboration with the Safe Harbor Director of the Minnesota Department of Health, with the Safe Harbor Director, that might not be quite the right term, but the Department of Human Services, and to have a similar spot in the Department of Public Safety, and to work on training and work on the kind of responsibilities that are listed here. I do want to emphasize we're not talking about directing investigations themselves for this role. That's the work of the task forces that are both funded around the state and not funded, because there's a number of local agencies that are pushing this themselves. But there is a role kind of at the next level up, the policies and standards as listed here. And this is in parallel to a similar role that is coordinating the violent crime enforcement teams and those grants around the state for guns and gangs and drugs. So with that, members, I will simply stand for questions and any discussion on this now, and then we'll move it forward as well.
Are there any questions for Representative Pinto? Anyone else that wishes to testify on House File 2785? Question from Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not a question, just a quick statement. I'm full support of this. With Representative Pinto, as he mentioned, we've worked together over the last couple of years on this. I think this is a necessary step. When you look at statewide, some of the training or exposure or things like that is just really difficult to try and accomplish. I think we have the regional, I forget what they're called, but the regional
Navigators,
thank you, which is a really good role, but I do think that, you know, the good news, I always tell people, members, the bad news is that we have very real trafficking problems, sex trafficking problems in Minnesota. The good news is our state's at the forefront of battling this. And as part of doing a good job at that, it's creating new issues that we need. They're good problems to have, but this is something that will definitely support it. So thank you for bringing this forward, Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Representative Miller. Representative Pinto, sounds like you have your next co-author on the bill. Unless he's already on.
Mr. Chair, he actually already is on. It didn't show up on the printout here, but we dropped the green slip in whatever that was, Monday. So, yeah, he's on it.
Wonderful. Thank you. With that, the chair lays over 2785 for possible inclusion in the division's omnibus bill. Thank you, Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Representative Mueller moves House File 418 for possible inclusion in the division's omnibus bill. Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So House File 418 is the sexual assault working group bill that we have heard in this committee before. It's also been in the Government Operations Committee. And just a reminder, the need for this bill really rises out of the Deny Justice series and also the fact that over the years we just keep amending different provisions of the criminal sexual conduct statutes. If you remember, we heard testimony, very persuasive testimony from prosecutors who have had to deal with these laws and some of the nuances, but also from survivors and members of the community, and we heard that testimony in government operations before. I don't want to do a lot of talking. I know we're short on time, but I also asked Representative Miller to come up here because part of the reason why we put this bill back on the schedule today had to do with an issue that arose in his community that we really think that we can also address with the working group. So I will turn it over to Representative Miller.
Representative Miller.
I'm going to go ahead and let this testifier go first if you'd like to.
Are you sure?
Absolutely.
Okay. My name is Lindsay Bryce. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for having me here today. My name is Lindsay Bryce. I'm the Law and Policy Director at the Minnesota Coalition Against Sexual Assault. I've told you that a few times this year so far. And I'm here to speak in support of this bill to thank Representative Mueller and everybody else who has been working on it. MnCASA's policy work is informed by both our member programs, our allies, as well as criminal justice system professionals, survivors, and many others. We really take a multidisciplinary approach to this work. And what we have found is that that approach really gets us to the best result in terms of things that don't create unintended consequences, that move the work along in ways that it needs to be moved along but don't create additional problems. Last year, we received a strong message from advocacy programs that they were seeing substantial problems with the prosecution or lack thereof of alcohol and other substance-related offenses, or substance-related sexual assault offenses. And to be clear, I say last year, this isn't a new conversation, but this most recently we had some significant conversation last year. So we started looking at carefully at the definitions of mental incapacitation, physically helpless, trying to figure out how to solve that. But then we sort of took a step back and talked about how this is a statute that's been amended, changed, added to many different times. There are subdivisions that are internally inconsistent with other areas of the statute. It's so intertwined. The entire chapter is so intertwined, and because of all those various issues, we really came to the conclusion that something we'd been talking about for a number of years, that it's really more effective to tackle the whole thing at once. So that's what we're hoping to do with this. The other thing I'd add is that I was working on something else last night. I'm newer to MnCASA, though I've been part of this work since the 90s. So I was looking through a number of old files that I obviously didn't have anything to do with or didn't work on, and I found a file from about, I don't know, 2011 or so that said, essentially, we really need to figure out a way to comprehensively work on this entire criminal sexual conduct statute. So this is not a new conversation, and we'd ask you to support it.
Thank you, Ms. Price. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for kind of giving us this latitude to revisit this a little bit. I thought it was important, and just for the record, everyone, we've come a long way this session. I'm Representative Miller. This is Representative Mueller. As you can see, we don't really look that much alike, but we've finally gotten it straight, I believe. So good job, everyone. A little more serious, I want to thank Representative Mueller for doing this. I must have been gone the day because I said, we have to do this. And she's like, it's already happening. And I do promise, Mr. Chair, that I haven't talked to him yet, but the other body, I know we need to do this, and that's kind of a public pledge that I'm going to see what we can do to make sure that we get this into the into the final bill so we can do this. What I want to address, members, is, you know, earlier this session I brought forward a story during Representative Grossel's bill presentation about my wife's story back in 1982. And one of the things I said is unfortunately things haven't changed much over those years. I think our laws have gotten tougher, but I think the execution of the laws, and maybe they were the same back then, but the execution is just not helping. And currently in my district, my little rural district, I currently have three cases of pretty severe child molestation that are in the court system right now. And just in one of my counties alone, investigating those, in one of my counties alone in the past year, there were two other significant ones. And these are stories that would curl your toe. One of them involved in a daycare where the son of the daycare owner, allegedly, it's a court case right now, but the son molested some children, and the daycare provider allegedly threatened those kids not to tell anyone. Okay, this is real stuff in rural Minnesota, folks. And my frustration when I came forward with Representative Grossel's bill, that was on the pornography, I understand, but just for the people that haven't been here before, he's in the last couple of years, he's tried to do several different fronts on this. We just aren't serving those victims and their families in the right way. The process, I think we've done a good job of protecting the victim, especially when it's children, but the process is very rough on these families, and people should be allowed to provide a vigorous defense. So I don't have a problem with that, but we're just having problems with that. And then I don't usually use this word too often, so I hope it has some impact, but these families are legitimately being re-victimized when they see the very soft sentences that are happening and what's happening after that. And just to put a real face on it, now members, we had, when Chair Mariani agreed to allow us to do this today, I really tried to scramble and get some of these moms in, because here's, that in my mind, this is how serious it is. These moms just want to stay home and take care of their kids, but when I said, can you make it there, they were trying to find ways to take off work and find babysitters and stuff like that. Now, why do they have babysitters? Because you have 12, 8, and 4-year-old children that I'm talking about now that are now sleeping in the living room with their parents. I have an 8-year-old that's bedwetting again. You have all these terrible things that are happening, and these moms are saying, you know what, we have to do something better for my kids and for future kids. I can't emphasize this enough, members, and so if we can do a study, and I know studies around here can mean a lot of different things, but if we can really dig in to how to address some of these issues. I don't know that we can, as a committee or as a legislature, address the root problems in this. I think that goes deeper, but we certainly can help these families in these very terrible situations. I encourage everyone that if you see documentaries or movies, or, you know, there's like a Mystic River is a fictional movie, but it just portrays how devastating this is to not only the individual, but the collateral damage that happens with people. This is, we talked about some of the ways that we're destroying our communities, very important issues that we addressed earlier in this committee. This is the thing that is destroying the infrastructure of our society, and we have to address it. So I'll wrap up with that. I just want to really, I thank you for the grace in letting me kind of punctuate how important this is that we get this right, because I just don't think that we're getting it right now. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Miller. You and I have had some conversations about this. My hope is that in the interim we can create some opportunities for that kind of testimony to be offered and for the committee to be able to engage directly with whoever wishes to come forward to share you know, their experiences. Lee Johnson.
Chair Mariani, Representative Miller, thank you for bringing this forward. This is something that needs to be done. We need to do it now. And I also want to thank you for keeping it clean. I would love to be able to get this on the floor tomorrow and pass it out. This is something that needs to be done. I've actually had to work with some of the victims and investigate these cases. They're horrible. Every time they go to court or even prepare for court, they're re-victimized time after time after time. We need to do some changes. but they're so intertwined with each other, we need to do a wholesale change all at once, and this is the only way to do that is with a working group to put everything together. So thank you.
Representative Mueller, would you be, we haven't had this conversation, but would you be, yes, would you be amenable to redoing your motion to refer to House File 418 to Ways and, did it come to us from Ways and Means? Want to make sure, yes, to Ways and Means?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would be willing to.
Very well. Representative Mueller moves that House File 418, and has this been amended? No, I don't.
It was amended in government operations.
As
but you have the amended version from here.
Well.
Yep.
So this is the first engrossment. All right. Representative Mueller moves in House File number 418. Oh, Representative Mueller, we are sitting in Ways and Means at this point. Is that? Yeah. So we were hearing this as an informational for possible inclusion on this bill, which I think we may yet do. But I think what I'm hearing bipartisan support for is encouragement for a Ways and Means committee to move this to the General Register.
Yep,
so,
that sounds right.
So I'm placing that on the record. Representative Mueller, Representative Johnson? Very well. So, again, thank you. All right. We have update information. It's a good thing we live in a digital world. So we have possession of House File 418. So then Representative Mueller amends her motion to be that House File 418 as amended be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Am I good? Okay, we'll get it right.
So, Mr. Chair, the bill is in fact in front of us? This is not an informational hearing, or right?
The bill is in front of us.
Okay. Okay. All right. Well, thanks.
Yes, that would be my motion then, Mr. Chair.
Your motion is that House File 418, and since we're working off of the engrossment, as it came back from Ways and Means, I don't think we need to say as amended. All right. So House File 418 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair, sorry, one just further point of clarification. Is it to recommend that Ways and Means send it to the General Register then?
Do we need to add that back on? I believe our motions here are to send the bills back the way they came to us.
Okay.
And then Ways and Means would take action to further action from there, which we'll be communicating that we want to send to the General Register.
All right. Very well.
So we have that on the record. All right. I want to make sure we're all good because I'm not sure we're good, but I want to make sure we're good.
Good.
Yeah? Representative Pinto?
Yeah.
All right. Very well. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Mueller, Representative Miller, and Ms. Bryce and members. Until tomorrow at 12:45, this committee stands adjourned.